session number 5225, Reel 7.
Mr. Butt, Reel 7. You said your parents didn't come to the Haynes unprepared.
Well, yes, they respected the fact that food was rationed. They were also coming, as I was given to understand, unannounced. And they would bring items that were in short supply with them. Meat and sugar and butter, etc. The only panic situation would be having to get the beds prepared. But then that would be... They would take that in their stride, the Haynes's.
Where did your parents stay?
That's a very good question, because we had a lodger, didn't we? So time has telescoped the memory a bit, but I rather suspect that the parents slept upstairs in the double bed. Whether the lodger was shipped out, unless he went in Uncle's bed and I slept in my single bed, and Uncle went in with Mrs. Oh, we all slept in the house somewhere. So it was all very congenial.
Did you ever visit London?
Yes. I can't be sure just when, but what stage, what year. But when it was felt safe, shall we say, I was encouraged to spend my school holidays at my parental home. And of course I had a whale of a time. I could ride on all the buses that I could find, and trams, etc. See my other friends, go down to the dump on a Saturday morning, the dump that all the timber from bombed out houses would be placed. Door frames, doors, window frames, floorboards, floor joists. There was just an enormous dump of bomb damage, reusable bomb damage, and then we were sent down there to salvage decent timber to put on the fire, because it would help out with the coal rationing.
How did London seem to you? I mean that question in two ways. One, just as a comparison with country life, as you'd been away for so long. And the other, how was it different in wartime than it had been when you knew it?
The difference being that there was the emergency water supply reservoirs all over the place. BWS, blackout. The protective netting on the buses, on the windows of the buses. Other windows taken out. You see, on a bus today, when you sit just inside where the conductor usually stands, if it is an old-fashioned bus with a conductor on the back, at right angles to you sit in, there would be a pane of glass just above the ticket box, the used ticket box. Well, that pane was removed for wartime safety. But the buses themselves had netting over the windows with just a diamond cut out in the middle so that you could see where you were. Although that was very difficult, because you had dim lighting in the bus. At night time, dim lighting in the bus and dim street lights, and you had to know the area to know just whereabouts you were. But everybody helped everybody else. Blackout was very stringent, and there was the air raid shelter at Granny's. Once or twice the air raid siren would go when I was at home. And it was, come on, down the shelter. And one went down the shelter just for a few hours but nothing like the nights that they had had during the Blitz. Well, if it was going to be, they had a nose for this sort of thing. If they thought that it was going to be prolonged, I wouldn't have come home anyway. One nice little social thing, I think, that I witnessed was when the siren went at night time and we were in bed, we'd get up and we'd go down the shelter. But the drill was, such was the neighbourliness of the road, that you left your front door open just in case there was an incendiary bomb at the back of the house and the fire watchers that were on a rota basis on duty could just run through the house and put the fire out, even if the house was deserted. Now, can you imagine almost a panic situation of a fire in the back of a house and somebody running through the house in darkness because it's night time? But still, parents would make the cushions look presentable because somebody might come through the house in the evening, and that was taboo, to have an untidy house. And the last thing Mother did before she went down to the shelter was to bump up the cushions and put it all straight. And I find that absolutely incredible.
To what extent were you turning into a country boy and finding it slightly strange to adjust when you came back to the big city?
I tried to use the vernacular of the country, OR for yes. And I smile now. I'm a great fan of the Archers, and that's Midlands, and the dialect is chippy, and I like it. And one would talk about or try and imitate the country style of living. So I suppose I did get immersed into the country. See, where the Haynes were living was literally a stone's throw from the Foxhounds' kennel, the Heythrop Hunt. And the hounds were exercised twice a day. They were exercised on foot. That is, the keepers, the whips and the boss of the hunt wouldn't go on horseback. They would walk with the hounds. And on quite a few occasions, I would go out with them just for something to do. And it would be a 2 or 3 mile walk around. This was, it passed the time during school holidays, when one's not walking to and from school. And we got very friendly, and of course I didn't mind dogs. Well, there were 2 dogs in the house. The only time one was told to be wary of a hound, and I never experienced it, was the danger it was if a bitch was in pup. And obviously she would feel threatened and protect herself. But I would have the hounds all round my legs and licking my hands, etc., etc. Therefore, I got their smell, and I was no threat to them, and we just took to one another. So one became a country lad, I suppose. There were other evacuees about, but we were in the minority in that part of the town, because we were, as I said, a mile out of the town. So one very much identified with the country boys.
How long did it take before the country boys would play with you, talk to you?
Oh, I think almost from the word go, children seem to know no barriers, unless there is something marked about a child. And I like to think I integrated pretty well. Mind you, I had a head start, because very early on, when I was at the rites, I was given some toys, which were fairly unique, I suppose. It was an army set from Dinky with the lorry and a couple of tanks and a gun. Well, of course, I had that. It's like me having the ball and I can be captain of the football team. I had these toys and the other boys wanted to play with me because they wanted to play with the toys. So one had a bit of a head start. Bit of a rotter at times because I had been spoilt as a child. Therefore, I've only got to yell and I get my own way. But in the child situation, you don't. You're just the same as them, and that got me into trouble a few times. But by and large, we had our games. Whether it was because it was country and not town, or whether it was because we were getting older anyway, but the games were different to what I had experienced at home.
How so?
We didn't play hopscotch. Or we did.
Did you have a pavement?
There was a pavement, but it wasn't conveniently marked out with the paving stones of home. So if you played hopscotch, you had to draw the squares out. One played in the road with the tops because it was a lovely tarmac surface. But one very much took the cue from what one saw at the pictures. If we saw a film about the French Foreign Legion, we would put handkerchiefs under our caps and run around like Beau Guests all over again. Or when we saw The Mark of Zorro, we would go down to the railway line, cut ourselves some willow sticks, whittle the bark off in patterns on the handle, put our raincoats round our necks, and we were Mark of Zorro. So we very much influenced by what we'd seen at the pictures. As time went on and we had seen pictures of the war, the propaganda films in which we serve, etc., etc., there was one barn in a field, a derelict barn, which we made even more derelict by great fun, pulling the walls apart. It wasn't vandalism, we were just playing. And we would play defenders and attackers, the goodies and the baddies.
Germans and English?
Not necessarily, it was just the attackers and the defenders. But on one particular day, there were three groups of us. There was one lot attacking, one lot defending, and another two or three perched high on a wall, pretending to film the whole event. So we were making a film. Now, when one thinks about it today, that was very progressive, because we were using make-believe in our make-believe.
Quite sophisticated.
Yes.
What proportion of time would you say you spent with local children as opposed to evacuees?
Couldn't distinguish that because there were very few evacuees in that part of Chibby Norton. So we just integrated all the time and we would... I suppose there might have been the rivalry at times between us and them. Or we would try and assert ourselves because we were from the town and therefore we were better than them. But generally, I think we got on fairly well. It was a leader had to emerge. We might even have taken it in turns to be the leaders and the servants and my lord. Yes, my lord. And my lord would say, oh, you don't have to call me my lord. And this would all be the play acting that we'd seen on the films. And then we'd say, yes, my lord. Oh, sorry, I don't have to call you that. And we got on fairly well, I should think. No more or no less, though, than any other group of kids.
You put on a bit of a rural accent when you came back to London, you said. In Tipping Norton terms, did you speak with a London accent?
I suppose I must have done, yes. It was, as I said earlier, I didn't come from the East End. I was from East London, but not the East End. But I suppose one had an East End accent. One dropped the H's and didn't sound the end of words. So just by the way one spoke, you knew, or the person to whom you were speaking knew, whether you were an evacuee or a country lad.
You seem to have got on quite well with the children. How did you get on with local adults? I mean, were there ever any comments in a bus queue or at a shop or anything like that?
Well, the adults knew of the evacuees. There were still a number in the town. Provided we behaved, I suppose we were tolerated. But any misbehaviour, of course, we were from the East End and you stuck out like a sore thumb and may have been victimised for it. Oh, well, obviously there's trouble because it was the evacuees that did it.
To what extent do you think people had an idea about what the East End was like and East End people were like?
Well, I wasn't conscious of it at the time, but I suppose, thinking back now as I'm older, they had read of the Sydney Street Siege and the Mosley Riots and the East End, the terrible East End and the cramped living conditions, as I say, that happened in between Aldgate and Poplar, but wasn't attributed to us at West Ham. Oh, no, no. In our early mixed-up type of schooling, we went to the cinema. Chibbin Norton had two cinemas, and we went to the other cinema to which we first went to on our arrival. Such was the quality of of the projectors that the thing broke down, or perhaps the electricity failed or something, and there was a lull for an hour and a half. And, well, it took a little while to keep us in order. Well, one boy got up and he sang a song. And we learnt this song. And the cinema management were quite thankful that that song kept us occupied for half an hour. And the boy who taught the song was given a free ticket for the pictures subsequently. And it was a very old London song. But he craftily adapted the words to suit our particular situation. We are some of the West Ham boys, we are some of the lads. As we go walking down the Barking Road, doors and windows open wide. Well, as I say, this was a corruption of a song that I found out was more around the Elephant and Castle way. And us evacuees adopted that song as our sort of anthem, perhaps, and if we felt a bit important or wanted to assert ourselves, we would sing this. But even so, that doesn't last for long, because you can't maintain that hierarchy. You've got to... Children are adaptable, they are forgetful, they're fairly loyal. So you make friendships and you have arguments and renew your friendships. It doesn't, any anger doesn't really last for too long. So all in all, I think we integrated fairly well.
Did you want to go home?
I suppose I did.
Because it seems that most, presumably, children did return.
Well, they did, because they were living under conditions foreign to what they had been used to. The foster parents were probably exercising more strict discipline than the children would have had at home, or indeed would have been used to anyway, because the foster parents were discharging their responsibility to the best of their ability. So disenchantment set in all round, I think. It was just that some of the children didn't fit, so they would go home. So another part of the care that the Haynes lavished on me was that, and I'm not too sure just at what age I was, it might have been 12 or 13, probably round about that age. But that was the age at which it was felt by my parents, and certainly by my grandparents, that I could have a pair of roller skates. And rumour has it that Grandma would have bought the roller skates, but Auntie wouldn't allow it. She wouldn't take that responsibility of me skating down the roads, unsupervised. So I didn't have roller skates. Now that to me demonstrates the care that they had, which was understandable, but I felt a little bit hurt about it. Still, I got my own back on everybody, because one of the evacuees had a bike, and I learnt to ride a bike at Chipping Norton, and I didn't tell anybody. I just got on, or let's have a go, and very quickly I learnt to ride a bike, so one could go around a little bit unsupervised in that respect. I was very hard on my footwear, and I was always told off by my parents for wearing out my shoes and boots.
Do you think the money your foster parents had was enough to keep you? I mean, the money they were given.
They were given, i.e. from the state. I shouldn't think so. Who bought my clothes, I just don't know. But then, of course, clothes were rationed. But I didn't feel deprived. And I'm sure I wasn't. Just had a good time.
What about religion? Did the Haynes go to church?
No, they didn't. And I was left to make my own way as far as religion.
Did they require that you should go, or did you want to go?
I think they took the view that I ought to do what I had been used to doing. And before the war, I was sent to Sunday school. So I felt obliged to carry on going to Sunday school, and I did for a while. I tried various Sunday schools, I know. But Sunday schools was on Sunday afternoon, and it impinged on my recreation. So after a while, I managed to drift out of going to Sunday school, and nobody questioned it, or if they did, I had an answer for it, and just by default I dropped the Sunday school. But then a boys' brigade unit was started, so I joined the boys' brigade. Now this was a Methodist unit. Funny thing, religion to a child far away from home. There was a very fine Norman church, Church of England church, Anglican church in the town. There was the Baptist church. The Methodist church, well, it was a Methodist church, but over the doorway it had Wesleyan. And of course that was new to me, Wesleyan. And it was known as the Wesleyan. But the, as I say, the boys' brigade unit was started by the Methodist Church. And life gets a bit complicated. All these people marrying more than once. Mrs. Haynes' father was a stepfather. Now that sounds Irish, I know, but as far as I can make out, her father married, or her mother had married twice. And she was related in some way or other to a very old lady up the town who was staunch Methodist. But Sunday mornings was Boys Brigade Bible study, and I would go to the Methodist church Sunday morning. And then round to Aunt Nan's, as she was known throughout the town, after Bible study, and then we'd go back to the Methodist church for the service, the morning service. So there was a certain amount of religion in my life whilst I was away.
What religion were your parents?
No, they weren't nominally C of E because they were Baptist. But I was sent to a Church of England Sunday school, so one that just became Church of England. There was a time when I did go to the Anglican Church in Chipping Norton, and life was getting fairly interesting in that sphere until it came up for confirmation. And when I found out that I had to learn the catechism, and when I looked in the prayer book and found out what the catechism was, I thought, no way am I going to learn that. So I wasn't confirmed, and another rebel. I've reformed since then. Did go to the Baptist Sunday school for a while, but I tried to go round them all to find out what suited me. But as one grew older, the rebel in youngsters, you turn against religion, it seems to me. And I did, except, say, for the Boys' Brigade. I was quite happy. There would be a parade night, say a Thursday or a Friday night, and Bible study on the Sunday morning.
While you were away from home, you were growing older, growing up. Was it your foster father, your uncle, or your father who took it upon himself to talk to you about growing up and facts of life?
Nothing was said in that way at all. I suppose they felt that I had enough to do just living. And the war was on, so everybody's hands were fairly full, I should think.
Pick up what you did from friends?
Well, yes, you did. It's the education of the playground, to sum it up.
What did you do about celebrations, like birthdays and holidays?
Well, one had birthdays. My birthday being in the middle of April always seems to be around about Easter time, and Easter time is school holidays, so by and large I was home at Easter. So for the greater part of my birthdays I had birthdays at home
in London,
and Christmas was spent at home, except when the war took the turn for the worse and it was considered to be unsafe to be at home.